Thank you so much. I just want to make sure my mic is okay, great. And I won't stretch my voice. I appreciate all the accommodations that I've been given to speak to you today, and it's a pleasure to be here. We love to come to St. George, and as Mitzi mentioned, we do have a lot of cases down here. And in just a minute, I'll tell you a little bit about what the Division of Securities actually has the responsibility to do. But as she said, my job is the Investor Education Coordinator, and I love this job. My degree is in education, and my opportunity to educate folks runs everywhere from birth to death, because we talk about investor education for young people in college savings accounts. We train them in grades 4 through 12 with what's called the stock market game. And then we also educate lots of public employees here in the state, and we partner with AARP, church groups, Utah retirement systems. On any group that will have us come, we will speak to. Because we find that there are cases of what we call affinity fraud, and we'll cover that in the presentation. But I just want to tell you how happy I am to be here today. Your weather is gorgeous. I would live in St. George October through April if I could. And I try to plan as many events down here as I can. And when I'm here, I do a lot of events. In fact, I was just over at the St. George Academy, the new charter high school over in Washington Fields. And it's a beautiful school. We're trying to get the stock market game going over there. I was at Pineview High School yesterday helping a teacher start the stock market game there. And you might be saying, well, what is the stock market game? I'll just take a minute and tell you. So it's run by an association called SIFMA, and that stands for Securities, Industry, and Financial Markets Association. It is an association that contains all of the large firms like Fidelity, Charles Schwab, all the big banking firms on Wall Street, and they have a foundation, an education foundation, and they sponsor the stock market game out of this foundation. And the students are given a virtual $100,000 portfolio for a 10-week period of time to invest real-time in the stock market. And they can buy stocks, bonds, or mutual funds. Well, because it's only 10 weeks and because kids are naturally high-risk takers, of course they go for the stocks. And it's my pleasure to watch those portfolios grow and to help their teachers know how to help the students better in that 10-week period of time. At the end of 10 weeks, we hold a banquet, an awards banquet, and invite the top three teams in the elementary, junior, middle school, and high school divisions to a banquet, along with their parents, teachers, and administration. So we do that twice a year. The students do have to play through a teacher's registration, so not anybody can just sign on and play. And I wish all of you could play along, but anyway. So that's a little bit about me and my job. Last year, we did over 50 events, and we reached an estimate audience of over 15,000 people. So we are very busy, but I love to meet with groups like yours because I think this is Pass It On program is really a where we can not only help ourselves but help each other. Now, on the back table, that blue table back there, we've put together... We, meaning the division, has put together a bag of information that you can take home. And inside the bag is a couple of things. It's another program sponsored by a federal agency called Money Smart for Older Adults. And it's sponsored by the FDIC, and you might recognize that as the insurer of your bank accounts. And it's particularly nice because it's in large print. That's nice for you and me, right? Also in that packet is a Department of Commerce contact list. In the presentation, I'll show you some phone numbers and websites, mostly websites. And it's okay if you're not website friendly or internet savvy, because we are able to help you over the phone, and we can mail things to your home. If you're not comfortable using the website, you can just call our office. If you want to have a complaint form, we can mail that to you, and you can mail it in via regular mail. So anyway, that's on the front page, is all of the contact information for the Department of Commerce. On the back, and it's kind of microscopic, and I you'll have to get out your high power readers for those for the back. But that explains who the Department of Commerce regulates and who has to license with us. And that will be impactful to you as you listen to the presentation. I've also put in four different brochures in the bag. The first one is a Senior Safe program, which explains how the nationwide association that we belong to, called NASA, is preventing elder financial exploitation and keeping seniors safe. So that helps give you some hints of what to watch for and who to contact if you need help. The second one is called 10 Things You Can Do to Avoid Fraud. And that's put out by the Federal Trade Commission, also a great resource. This one, the risks of buying gold, silver, and platinum, we partnered with, for the last 2 years, with the Commodity Futures Trading Commission over at the Senior Games. And for the last 2 years, we had a booth over there and distributed material to the participants at the expo on exactly what we're going to find out today is what is a big fraud, what are the things we can watch for. And this brochure is a brand new one from the CFTC on the risks of holding precious metals in your portfolio or in your safe or under your bed or anyway. And the fourth one is a broker check brochure, and it describes the broker check process. And there is a public database where you can check on the licensing status of any financial professional who is securities licensed. This database contains over 1 million names, and if you want to Google your neighbor, friend, or financial professional, you can find a lot on Google, but on BrokerCheck, you can find out specific things like if they've ever had a complaint lodged against them, how long they've been in the business, what they're actually licensed to do, any disclosures that may have happened, like complaints in the past that have been resolved or not, or ongoing. So the BrokerCheck process is a very, very good one. I highly recommend it. It does require the internet. So if you're not comfortable doing that, just call us with the name and I can pull up the broker check report and put it in the mail to you. Okay? So then, since I put the bags together, a couple of other things have come my way that I wanted to share with you. The first one, of course, is the Pass It On booklet. And you'll notice in that it contains a lot of the flyers that we'll talk about on the scams and who to report it to. It also contains some bookmarks, but I wanted to point out right under the Pass It On logo is a website where you can bulk order these items. If you have another group that you would like to share this information with, they will mail them to you free of charge to your home. Or if you'd like the division to provide it, we can do that too. So that folder contains the original scam alerts, and then they've added two more, which are over on the table, the IRS imposter scam and the tech support scam. So be sure and pick those up as you go around the table. The last two items I think are pretty important. Have you noticed on the news lately that there's like a lot going on weather-wise and fires and hurricanes? And, you know, often we're unsure how to prepare for such an event. And it's such a beautiful day outside today that I can't even comprehend something like that coming through the St. George area. But if you're nervous about it, you can take this green sheet. It's a disaster checklist, and it contains the information that you might need financially to be prepared. Now, if you end up filling it out, the hard copy, just make sure you put it in a safe place, a secure place, such as a safety deposit box, or in a very safe place at your home, because it does want you to write down account numbers. But so often nowadays, we have that information either on the computer, you know, we don't get bank statements like we used to, it might be on a phone, and it's always important to have a backup copy. So just if you do take one of those and fill it out, just make sure you put it in a secure place. The last thing I'm going to talk about is this Financial Fraud Institute. And I have a slide at the end, so if you're eating your lunch and you want to listen at the end also, that's fine. But this event has been held up in Salt Lake City twice, and the federal officials wanted to do it down in St. George because, like I mentioned, we do have a lot of cases going on down here. So the Financial Fraud Institute has been organized for November 2nd at the Dixie Center, and they're going to hold it in that glassed-in area out front. They're going to provide a free box lunch / dinner, and it's going to be held from 4 to 7 o'clock in the evening. If you would like to come to that, you'll hear a lot of the local authorities and also federal authorities talk about financial fraud. And on the back of the flyer is the agenda for the evening. You do have to register either by phone or on the internet. And that just helps us have enough meals for the crowd. So let's go on with our presentation here. The Division of Securities, we're located in Salt Lake City at the Heber Wells Building. We're part of the Department of Commerce, and we are the regulator for all investment advisors, broker-dealers in the state. Now, if a firm has a book of business below $100 million, an investment advisory firm has a book of business below $100 million, we are the regulator for that firm. If the firm has above $100 million, then the Securities and Exchange Commission has regulatory authority over it. So we regulate basically the small investment advisors and broker-dealer agents. We register all securities in the state, so anything that is offered as a security should go through our office. Now you might be saying to yourself, well, what is a security? What's the definition? It's different in every state, but in Utah, the definition of a security is really quite broad. And I'll give you three things to remember about the definition of a security in the state of Utah. First of all, if you part with something of value, you're promised a return on your money, and you lose control of what happens to that money. That passes what's called the Reeves test, and that would define it as a security in the state of Utah. So let me say them again. You part with something of value, you're promised a return on your money, and you lose control of what happens to that money. Those three things are vital in us determining whether an offer is a security or not. So in the state of Utah, some of the things that fall into that category above and beyond the normal stock, bonds, and mutual funds are investment contracts are deemed a security, promissory notes are deemed a security, some partnerships in an LLC could be deemed as a security. The list is really quite long, but that's the most common ones. And you can find those in our administrative code if you want the whole list. So we are open 8 to 5, Monday through Friday. You can call our office. You can submit a question through our email address, and we're happy to help. And so what are we happy to help with? Number one, we can verify the license status of a financial professional. And that would be done in a variety of ways, mostly through broker check, but we have access to the CRD system, which is the national licensing body through FINRA. And FINRA stands for Financial Industry Regulatory Authority. And it's the nationwide body that licenses all financial professionals. We can also provide that report, which is somewhat of a background check. And why would it be important to call the division and check on a financial professional? Well, sometimes we deal with unlicensed activity. And if that's the case, we would hook you up with someone in our enforcement section, because unlicensed activity is something that we take very seriously. We investigate it year-round, and we partner with the Attorney General's office and local prosecutors to, if the charges go criminal, then we can, through our investigation, put a target or perpetrator in prison. The other thing that we can do is we can check on any offering in the state. Even if it's a startup company, those things need to be registered with our office. Now, if something in the presentation today triggers your mind about, well, maybe I should file a complaint, or so-and-so that I know, they should maybe file a complaint. If that's the case, then we definitely suggest you file a complaint, because that's how all our cases have to get started. We can't just burst in and say, we're here to investigate you. We have to, we strictly go by complaints in the enforcement section. Now, in the licensing and compliance section, then we have the power to go in and audit firms. and we do that on a regular basis. So those are some of the things that you can help us with, and we can in return help you with, is be aware of each other, talk about your situations. If something is in your area or your community or church that's going on with someone and it falls into that security category and it seems suspicious, we definitely want you to report it. We also provide investor education seminars and material for events like this. So what is affinity fraud and does it happen in Utah? Affinity fraud is defined as someone within your group, whether it be a church group, a bowling club, your pickleball group. It can happen in a neighborhood. It can happen in any group that has affinity for each other. And it's one member of the group taking advantage of the other. And when we talk about securities fraud, it would be a member of the group offering a security to someone else and then taking their money in a misleading way. So in 2011, our picture right here, this lady is named Luella Day, and she lived in Lehigh. And she was in a church meeting and heard a speaker give a talk. And he seemed like a very good gentleman. It was a wonderful talk. Later that week, that gentleman came up to Luella, knowing that she had just sold some property and had a large sum of money, and offered to invest it for her. Well, she and her husband decided that he was such an upstanding member of their church group that they would go ahead and give him their money. So happens that he wasn't licensed. None of the promises he made were true, and he took and spent their whole $1 million. That was what they were going to live on for the rest of their life. It was a heartbreaking case. The individual did go to prison, but they were left penniless. In the meantime, while the case was being investigated, her husband passed away. So it was even more heartbreaking for the division to prosecute this case. But in 2011, there were four components of a new bill that were passed to protect and give enhanced penalties for affinity fraud. And also, that bill provided for a whistleblower component to our law. And so our second photo over here on the right is there was a case here in St. George, an 88-year-old lady out in Ivins, and I'm not telling you anything that isn't public information, was at the Dixie Center, actually, and found a booth that sold vitamins. And she became friends with the lady that was selling the vitamins, and when the expo ended, she ordered her vitamins from this lady that lived up in Utah County. Well, the vitamin lady's husband somehow found out that our 88-year-old friend in Ivins had just sold some property and had approximately $100,000. He came and knocked on her trailer house door and sat down with her at the kitchen table and proposed that she give him her $100,000, and he in return would give her $845 a month for the rest of her life. Because she was had mild cognitive impairment setting in, she thought that sounded like a good idea. Now, one of the signs of mild cognitive impairment is bad deals sound like good deals to you. Does it sound like a good deal for her to give $100,000, receive $845 for the rest of her life, and she's 88 years old? No, she would never recoup that $100,000, would she? You and I know that, but she didn't realize that. And he was her friend, quote-unquote friend. So anyway, the transactions took place. I was down here speaking at the monthly meeting of the Southern Utah Estate Planning Council. And at that meeting, we were talking about elder financial exploitation. A financial professional came up to me and he said, "I know of a lady who I think this is happening to." And I said, "Well, tell me more about it." And he told me about this instance. And I said, all he knew was that she sold land, she should have money in the bank, and she can no longer buy groceries. And I said, "Well, let's start an investigation. What I need you to do is fill out a complaint form." He did the very next day. We started the case, and within 4 months, with a little convincing on our part, to show the bank records. We have subpoena power to subpoena bank records. So we were able to subpoena the bank records to show this elderly lady that her money was gone. It was spent by this individual. She cooperated with us, and through a variety of circumstances, we were able to get this individual arrested, finding out he was a Canadian national. And in the process, he had a rich friend in Canada that put up the $100,000 to make the victim whole, which was part of the component of the whistleblower award. The victim was made whole, and the financial advisor who blew the whistle in May of 2014, he actually received a $15,000 whistleblower award. Now, that money doesn't come from the victim's money. That comes from our education fund, and that fund is fed by the fines and fees that we collect. So the bad guys really feed that fund, and they, you know, make it possible for me to come and speak. So they're kind of repaying society through all that. But anyway, that was our first and only whistleblower case to this day. But it just goes to show that blowing the whistle really does pay off. And in that individual's instance, we were so happy. In fact, everyone in our office was literally doing the happy dance, because we don't see a lot of happy endings to stories. So the Pass It On program, like I said, is sponsored by the Federal Trade Commission. We're going to talk for a few minutes about identity theft, charity fraud, imposter scams, healthcare scams, paying too much, You've Won scams, and then the new ones, the IRS imposter and tech support scams. Now, identity theft. When I was coordinating with Mitzi on this event, she said, be sure and talk about the Equifax breach, data breach. And I will do that. In doing so, I want you to remember this website if you're into looking up websites. And it's a new one sponsored by the Utah Attorney General's Office. And it has all of the links you would ever need to link you up to the Equifax data breach situation. And it's called idtheft.utah.gov. You can also do this in other ways, but I highly recommend you look at that. So to check your credit, of course, you can do that or report identity theft through the Federal Trade Commission at this phone number. And that information is on your Pass It On folders. Now, the Equifax data breach, because it's so new, we don't have flyers on it. But if you go in, and I did this just this last week because I hadn't checked to see if my information was compromised yet. It was very simple to do. It requires, or it suggests that you use a very secure computer, hopefully one that's encrypted. So I did it at work because the state computers are all encrypted. Because it asks for the last six digits of your Social Security number. You put in your name, your last six digits of your Social Security number, hit go, and my, thankfully, information hadn't been compromised. I was feeling really good that day. Thank you for encouraging me to do that. So anyway, it was as simple as that. So what do I do from here? Now that I know my data hasn't been compromised, I don't need to worry. Do I need to worry about it anymore? Well, I've thought about that for about a week, and I've thought, well, I probably need to be very careful giving out any kind of personal information, which I'm known as the scam queen, so I really have that radar pretty set pretty high anyway. And so if you have any questions about that, be sure and ask me afterwards. I can guide you more in doing that. But really, what the scam artists want in identity theft is your personal information so that they can impersonate you in some other way, either through Social Security, through a driver's license, through your insurance, your medical insurance. That's how they take advantage of you in that. Now, the imposter scams are a little bit different because imposters want to pretend to be somebody else so that you'll give them money. They either do it through phone or through email or not so much in person, because usually they're in another country, frankly. It's very hard to track. So what they want you to do in the imposter scams is wire them money in a variety of different ways. A variety of different requests are made. But the basic thing is they want you to wire money to them. And they want to wire it because wiring money is very hard to track, especially if it goes out of the country. Sometimes it's suggested that you get a Walmart card and load money on it, and then give them the numbers off that Walmart card. Or a reloadable debit card is another way that they do it. Either way, it's like sending cash, okay? And we don't want you to do that. We have cases that we've investigated that people really thought it was going to Nigeria to help get millions of dollars back into the United States, and it's just not the case. Typically, these cases, the imposter cases, are very hard to track. Down to a more normal level would be you pick up the phone and somebody says, "Hello, Grandma," or "Hello, Grandpa." And that's called the grandparent scam, and that's a very, very common scam. I think it's kind of dying down over the last year or so, but it was a very common scam, and someone would be pretending to be your grandchild, and you would say, "Well, hello, is this Jimmy?" And, no, "I'm your other grandson." And then they would get you to say the name. So this happened to my mom. She picked up the phone. "Hi, Grandma, this is David." And she has a grandson named David, so she really thought it was him. "Hi, David, how are you doing?" He said, "I'm fine, but I'm at a friend's funeral in California, and I don't have money to get home." And that sent a little red flag up my mother's pole. And she started to be suspicious because it wasn't like David to call her and ask for money. So she got kind of smart. She sat down on the bed because she was shaking a little bit. It scared her to death, really. And she sat down on the bed, and she let him talk for a minute. And then she said, "Now, David, I don't remember your wife's name. What is your wife's name again?" And at that point, the imposter hung up the phone. Smart on my mother's part to do that, because this individual, we can only think that he probably got David's name off of Facebook. And that's how that happened. We still don't know to this day. But my mother definitely has that red flag running up her pole when she answers the phone now. So charity fraud. Some of you may have been approached, or you've seen in the newspapers the opportunity to help victims of hurricanes. And in southern Utah, hurricanes, right? No. I can always tell when an outsider comes from another part of the country, because they call it hurricane, right? Us locals, we know it's hurricane. So anyway, and the fires in California, you've seen probably GoFundMe opportunities to help someone who's down on their luck, either because of a child's illness or the death of a loved one. So what does all this mean? How do we look at the opportunity to help someone with the goodness of our hearts, but still protect our money? And that's what I want to teach you today, is how do we really know? We have a charity fraud expert in our office. She came over from the Division of Consumer Protection about 6 months ago and became a securities investigator. She is so knowledgeable. I sat down with her last week and just said, "You know, clue me in, because I think I know how to search a charity and see if there's, see how much, what percentage of the money actually goes to the charity, and there is a way you can do that." And she said, "We do it all the time, and I just want you to know that every charity in the state of Utah, every offer to help somebody needs to be either registered or exempt." Okay, and I'll tell you what that means in just a minute. So charity fraud by phone, how does it work? You pick up the phone, the charity sounds familiar. And I used to work for the Heart Association, the American Heart Association, so I kind of knew this a while ago, but it's gotten worse because there's so many charities out there. But the name sounds familiar, and they're soliciting money for the Fireman's Fund or some other, you know, cancer society that sounds familiar. And they want you to donate right there on the phone. I would suggest never to do that. There's other ways to donate. But when they pretend to be a charity, and you agree to contribute over the phone, what do they need? Your account number or your bank, your credit card number, your name, your phone number, your address. And then guess what? They don't just use it to get money. They take that list and they sell it to other frauds that are out there. So it's not only the business of collecting money under some unknown charity, it's the business of selling lists of people who are willing to give information or give money, and that is equally big business. So the Division of Consumer Protection has a similar database that we have to check on licensed individuals, and it's to check on charity. And Liz, my friend at work, said, tell them they don't even need to do it. The people that work for the Division of Consumer Protection love to look up charities and let you know. So in learning more about this, I actually did a couple of charity searches, and I just want to take a minute to tell you about it. So you go to consumerprotection.utah.gov. Off to the right, there's a box that says Registered Entity Search. Okay? For those who aren't internet savvy, we can do this for you. You just need to call and give us the name of the charity. But you choose either registered or exempt. So how do you know if they're registered or exempt? That was my question. What parameters are built into the system to know that? Well, a registered charity would be a large charity like Huntsman Cancer Foundation or the Red Cross, large ones that go perpetually, continually, year after year. The exempt charities are short-term blips like hurricane fund relief or somebody who has a medical need and it has a GoFundMe account set up. All of those have to be registered with the Division of Consumer Protection, either registered or exempt status. Then you search by the name. And I love children, so when I was playing with this database, I thought, I'm just going to put in the word children to see how many charities fall under the children category, okay? Well, after that search, and I searched for exempt ones, and there came up to be 27 charities that were exempt with the name children in the name of that charity. I'm like, holy mackerel, I didn't know that would be that many. Because if they're exempt, remember, they're short term. So I played with it a little longer, and I looked at, and once you get it pulled up, you can, it says percentage that goes toward the program. So guess how many were a 0% of the 27? No, I'm serious. Nine. Nine of them had 0% going towards the charity. So if you were to give to that charity, all of your money would be towards operating costs, okay? And it's legal. I don't know how, but it's legal. So then I thought, well, my parameters would be if I'm donating to a charity, I would want at least 90%. Because I understand, you know, costs in dealing with a foundation or, you know, going out and marketing something. I know there's costs related to buildings, having an office somewhere. So I thought, well, if my parameters are 90 to 100%, how many of those 27 charities fell into that 90 to 100%? Okay, there was 11. Yeah, so I would definitely pick one of those top 11, knowing that at least 90% of my money would actually go to the cause. The others were anywhere in between. Okay, so that charity search is really easy to do. And if you're not comfortable with the internet, again, we'll do it for you. And you just have to call that phone number, 801-530-6601, and say, I want to do a charity search, but I'm not internet savvy. Just go ahead and admit it. They love to help. So, okay, so the other scam I want to just make you aware of is sometimes after a disaster, and you might have somebody in Houston or in Florida that you know that is dealing with this right now. And I live in a town just north of Salt Lake, and we often get east winds. And sometimes the winds are so strong that our roofs blow off. So I've experienced this in having to look up a contractor's license, because after our east winds, and almost everybody needs roof repairs, guess who comes out? Yeah, there's trucks patrolling the neighborhood, and they stop and knock on your door, and I've met some of them. My first question is, are you licensed with the state of Utah? And what protection does that give me? Well, if they're licensed with the state of Utah, then DOPL, or the Division of Occupational and Professional Licensing, has the power to go and help you if something goes south. So I always check to see if they're licensed. And if they say, oh, my license is in my truck, I'll say, oh, go get it. I always try to do it with a smile, too. Because, you know, I have a good heart, and I want to be kind and all that, but I don't want to get ripped off, frankly. So check to see if they're licensed. And you can do that again on the Doppel website, or you can call them. I just wanted to read something to you because I found this in my preparation for this meeting. So there was actually a Southern Utah sting operation. Did you know that? On contractors. Yeah. In July, the Doppel investigators used Craigslist, online classified, field checks, and proactive investigations to snare those that were selling services that require a license, but they were not licensed to do so. So they kind of pretended to be individuals wanting bids on, you know, home repairs or whatever. Once they got the bid, and they used a commercial building as the bait. You're looking like you've read about this. Once the bids were received and fraud was discovered, the investigators issued administrative citations and fines and explained the process of getting licensed with Doppel. So in that investigation, they issued 32 citations for a total of $20,000 in administrative fines just in Southern Utah. So yes, it happens here, okay? So what's the process? What should you do if you need a driveway put in or a roof repair? We always suggest that you get written estimates and a contract. And you keep that written estimate and contract and read it when they've left in their truck, okay? Sometimes it's done in a hurry and they look like, well, I've got to get to this. And that's part of the problem is they feel like if they can rush you, then you won't read the contract. Or you won't even ask for a contract. Always good to get written estimates from two or three different contractors. Never pay with cash. Never pay with cash. They might ask for some portion of it up front. Do that on a credit card or check, but never pay with cash. And trust your gut. If you have any doubts, get someone else. Hire someone else. There is help available through the Doppel Contractors Division. They have a contractor section, and that's what they do. But same thing on the back of this sheet of paper. So Doppel, you'll notice, has a very, very long list. Everything from a nail tech, a chiropractor, a contractor, a pharmacist. So they license all of those individuals. So Doppel is a very big division in our department. But there is help available if you need it. So healthcare scams. How do we play into the healthcare scam idea? And how can you prevent from being scammed? The first thing is to protect your information so that your insurance is not compromised. Whether it's private insurance or Medicare, same issue. It can be compromised and someone can pretend to be you, go in and use your insurance information and actually get services from a doctor or hospital through using your insurance. The other thing is miracle cure scams. And we see a lot of this particularly over at the Expo Center. Hate to say that, but there's a lot of promises made curing a lot of old age illnesses that you and I kind of know that it might help, but it's not going to cure me. So anyway, just be really careful. So what happens in these healthcare scams? They say you need a new Medicare card or you need a new health insurance card. Or sign up for this discounted health insurance. And you need to act now because you know the deadline's coming up. I know it's open enrollment coming up really soon, right? And so this is where these scams are particularly prominent. But the reality is the scammers really just want your Social Security number, your financial information, your insurance number, and number one, they want money, okay? So just protect your information. You can always call this 1-800-MEDICARE and ask questions of what's the process. You may have to be put on hold for a while, but it's always good to take your time and check it out. And lots of good information in the packets that we can share. There's also help available through the local senior centers, and statewide they have what's called Senior Medicare Patrol Specialists. And that's their job, is to look into Medicare fraud. So go over to your senior center and just say, I want to know who the senior Medicare patrol specialist is because I have questions. They're not going to sell you anything. They're going to give you honest information. So what involves in pain too much? I was with my sweet mother-in-law this last week, and she just got a new HDTV, and they had to come and fix her cables and hook it up and everything, and why she is seeing crystal clear. She's so happy. I'm like, I'm happy for you. And the only thing she isn't happy about is her bill went sky high. And I said, it shouldn't have gone that high with just that change. We need to call and check on it. So next week, my husband and I are going to call and check to see why she's paying so much with just that little tiny change. She has no idea. She just paid the bill and, you know, told us about it, which is a good thing to do, too, because she didn't know who to complain to. But I know through personal experience that they can lower your bill on that. You might have to adjust your services, or sometimes there's a package, or you want to make sure you read the contract, know what you're getting for what you're paying. And then it doesn't hurt to say, I just can't pay that much. And then be silent. See what happens. Because they understand, and they want you to continue to have their service. But check your bills often and check your accounts often, because sometimes you're paying for things that you don't really need to. Now, the You've Won scams, those are, who gets those in the mail? You've just won a trip to XYZ. I've got about 5 on my desk because I love it when they send them to me because they don't know who I am. And that's another thing I wanted to point out. Free lunch seminars are rampant, right? And you probably get invited to several a week or a month. Well, if you want to, instead of throw those away or shred them, just black out your information, put them in an envelope, and send them to me. We look into them. There's really strict advertising laws in the securities industry, also in the insurance industry. And I'll talk about that in just a minute. But we look into them, and we even attend them sometimes if we get them soon enough. But just put all that mail in the envelope and send to me, because we do look into them, and we work closely with the Department of Insurance, because most of these free lunch seminars are either for what? Hearing aids? What else? Insurance? Reverse mortgages? You guys get them. Send them to me. So let me just tell you quickly, since you mentioned reverse mortgages, we have seen some things happen with reverse mortgages where they convince you need a reverse mortgage, and where it falls into our arena is when they offer to invest those proceeds for you. That goes south, and then all of a sudden you don't have a house and you owe money. So we take reverse mortgages very seriously, and if you have any questions on that, be sure and call our office, okay? So You've Won scams, rip them up, throw them away, don't even open them. Just know that if it sounds too good to be true, it probably is. And again, they're just trying to gather information, okay? So the IRS imposter scam, this is huge. Two components of it. The first one is you get a phone call that says, you are in trouble, this is the IRS calling, but sometimes they have an accent. I'm not saying anybody with an accent, that's a problem, but most of these IRS calls come from out of the country, okay? And the IRS will never call you. If you have tax problems, they send you a letter in the mail. They don't call you, okay? So, number one, if it's the IRS on the phone, you just know it's a scam. Hang up. And number two is if they have gotten your Social Security number and have filed a tax filing on your behalf and get a refund sent to, somewhere in Timbuktu, and you go to file your tax return, and they say, oh, this has already been filed. That is a problem, okay? And that needs to be reported. All of them need to be reported, but particularly if it deals with your own taxes. Okay, tech support scams, we're almost done. I know it's getting a little overwhelming because we want to be cheerful when we walk out of here, right? Not have a cloud, dark gray cloud over our heads. So the tech support scam happens when you're doing with your computer, whatever you do, and up pops a window that says virus, or you need help, or upload this software. Or someone calls you on the phone and says, this is Microsoft and you have a virus on your computer. Well, that's the tech support scam, okay? So what happens with that is they typically want to take control of your computer. I told you about my mom. Well, this one's about my dad. He actually fell for it. He loves to do stuff on the computer. The little window popped up that said, you need help. He clicked on it, and suddenly they started messaging back and forth, and all of a sudden he gets a phone call. Well, we need to take control of your computer, and they did for about 5 minutes until he realized it was a scam. Long enough to probably get information off his computer, but it ended up messing up bank accounts. He had to get a new computer, so we take that one very seriously. I met a gentleman over in Sun River a few years ago, and I was giving this presentation, and he came up to me and he goes, ah, that is me. I just paid $800 to these people. And I was just, my heart was broken because you can't get it back. And your computer is typically compromised, and you have to deal with that too. So,
So I wrote on the check. And I went to the bank, and she said, this is a scam. I canceled the check, and they hadn't cashed it yet.
Whoa. His lucky day, right? It's a very common scam, and I'm glad you told us about it, because some people, and this gentleman that came up to me, I was heartbroken for him, and he wanted to know if there was any way he could get his money back. And I said, I don't know. You can call and complain. Typically, once the money is sent, it's gone. So you were very lucky.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. So, but, you know, the whole point of this program is to share these experiences. They happen to real people. They really do. And if we don't tell anybody about it, then we can't warn others about, you know, his good results.
They did call within an hour the next day and say, the check wasn't any good. And I said, good deal. I'm glad we did it.
Yeah. You know, oh, my goodness. I'm so happy for you, frankly. I don't hear many success stories, so let's give him a hand. Okay, very last part of our presentation talks about investor protection in Utah. And again, I'm going to talk about our website. All of it is available to you if you call us. But I want to just point out a couple of things. So this is our website at securities.utah.gov, or you can call our number at 530-6600. We have an investor section that's full of good information. This is where you would find the complaint form. If you don't have a printer or don't have a computer, we can mail it to you. Same with the whistleblower referral. That's now online, and you can get that form to fill out if you know something's happening. Even if it's from a friend and you can't fill out all of the information on the complaint form, we have our ways. We have our ways of finding out. So anyway, but your information might be really valuable. This portion over here, we put this together. And I like to take a little credit for it because it's a 12-module course that you can go through, and it's sponsored by FINRA, who is the agency that does all the licensing. 12 modules to become more savvy about investing. And it's nonprofit. It's geared towards teaching the public about more important ways to invest safely. And then this Check Before You Invest box, that's where you do that search on FINRA's website called BrokerCheck. We can link you to not only BrokerCheck, but the Department of Insurance Agent Check, so you can see what kind of hat are these guys wearing. Are they just wearing an insurance hat, or do they have a securities hat on top? So what can you do to just prevent investment fraud? First of all, carefully evaluate advertising. The advertising rules, like I said, are very strict, not only for insurance, but even more strict for securities. So carefully evaluate, what is this advertisement really wanting me to do? If you get it in the mail, if you see it in the newspaper, evaluate advertising very carefully. Second thing is, understand the purpose of free lunch and free dinner events. The purpose is not to feed you, right? Is it to sell you something there at the free event? Typically not. Typically they want your contact information so they can make a one-on-one appointment at your home. Can the Division of Securities attend that one-on-one appointment? We could, if we knew about it and you invited us. Could we attend the free lunch seminar? Yeah, we could. We could evaluate that free lunch seminar and say, are they complying with the laws? Typically, they do at the free lunch seminars. But it's at that one-on-one appointment that they'll look at your portfolio and say, well, this looks great. I don't think you need me. Do they say that? No, they go, oh, you have got problems. I can see right now that you're going to have tax consequences down the road. But let me tell you, if you buy this product, you won't have any of those problems. Okay? That's what their goal is through those free lunch seminars. I'm going to quickly tell you, we did an evaluation. I have a partner that I like to work with on these because we did an evaluation of a firm up in Salt Lake City area that was sending out massive free lunch seminar, you know, targeting zip codes. And when she did the audit on this firm, she said, how many do you send out typically? It was around 50,000. Lots of free lunch invitations. And so when she did the audit, she started to look at how many people actually signed up for a one-on-one appointment. Actually came to the seminar, there was about 20, okay? Actually signed up for the appointment, there was about 10. So how many out of those 10, how many products, or I'll use the word annuity, how many annuities would that firm need to sell to pay for the whole thing, to pay for the mailing, to pay for the 20 people at dinner? How many?
One.
Not even one. He or she could do it by selling a half of one. Now, that's not possible, but they only have to sell less than one to pay for all that. So is it worth it for them? It sure is, because at the typical annuity, the commission on a typical annuity is 5 to 7%. We've even seen as high as 10%. So if you give them $100,000, what are they putting in their pocket? $10,000. And they might say, no fees, no commissions. Not true. They get it. Ask about, and if you have any questions about annuities, if you have one, and I've just made you pretty nervous, then you can talk to us. Heidi and I meet with people all the time. Heidi was in the industry for 30 years, got really tired of the industry standards that she was forced to uphold, and she came to the division because she'd rather be a regulator. So we have met with people on a one-on-one basis, them wondering, can I get out of this? Is it, you know, good for me to get out of it, or should I just stay in it? Ask about their licenses and designations. We had someone come to our office, and on their card, because that's what we evaluate cards, business cards, and behind his name it said CHSG. And that was a designation. You know, sometimes it's CFP or, you know, PhD. We all know what those mean. Well, this was CHSG. What does that stand for? We asked him, and he said, kind of went red, a little embarrassed, certified high school graduate. So, you know, there is a database where you can look up all of those designations. You can call our office, too. Anything suspicious, please call us. So check on a professional's license, either at securities.utah.gov, at finra.org for the broker check. Insurance.utah.gov has the insurance licensees and other occupations and professions in Utah at the Doppel website. Now, I want to just tell you about a hearing that was held recently by our division. It was an administrative hearing. It wasn't a criminal hearing, but it was a hearing that involved an insurance licensee here in southern Utah. And I can share the name with you because it's now public information. His firm name was One for the Money Financial, and his name is Abe Ashton. See you later. And he was actually only insurance licensed, but he was holding himself out as an investment professional. That's against the law. So in the end of August, we took an action on him, and administrative action, and it's looking really good that he now has to advertise that he's an insurance agent only. He can't pretend to be securities licensed because he's not. And the fine was quite substantial. So just towards the end, again, a reminder of the Financial Fraud Institute on November 2nd. It would be a great event for you to attend.
And
I know. and they're not going to sell you anything. We love to do that. We really love. And let me tell you who's paying for the free dinner, too, because you might be wondering. So that FINRA organization, that they have quite a bit of money because they license all professionals in the nation, and they have a large investor education fund. And so they're actually paying for the dinner, not a state agency or federal agency. So good things will happen at that Financial Fraud Institute. So what can you do from here? I brought about 40 folders and 40 bags tonight, and today, and I think there's probably, it looks like maybe 25 or 30 of you here, which means we'll have 10 left over. If you have someone in your circle of friends that you want to pass this information on to, take an extra one, okay? We're happy to share more information with your group. You can also, if you thought of another one while you were sitting here, like, oh, my homeowners association, we could probably do this in my homeowners association, or my, you know, pickleball club, or whatever group. We love to present. We try to shoot for groups of the size 40 to 50, which is perfect for your size group. But we will do what we can to come and present if you'll help us organize it. The other thing is call state agencies to check and report. Remember, if it sounds too good to be true, it probably is, okay? And I'll hang around for a few minutes to answer any questions. Do you have one?
Are you familiar with the Social Security scam that's come up recently?
You tell me about it, and I can probably say yes.
Okay. They call you up, and they say you're going to get a big increase in your Social Security, but you must give us your information.
Yes. So there's two components of that scam. The first one is, I don't know if you know about the strategy called file and suspend, okay? That was for a strategy that was discovered by financial professionals about 10 years ago. It was kind of a loophole in the Social Security system. And so you were able to file and suspend, and your spouse was able to start receiving benefits, and you were both making money and maximizing your Social Security benefit, right? So once Social Security caught on to it, they changed the laws last year, and file and suspend is no longer the perk that it used to be. So what the ride that investment advisors and insurance agents are taking is there was a whole bunch of software built so that people could file and suspend, and they were providing this software to these professionals to meet with you in a free lunch seminar, then go to your home and do a little provider report and say, well, we can help you maximize your benefits. Well, they can't do that anymore, but they're still on that train riding that maximize your Social Security benefits. I don't know, most of you may already be claiming Social Security, and you know, once you decide, you're kind of set in stone, right? What do they want you to do? They want you to come to the free lunch seminar. They want to sell you some other product, and they want to make themselves look really smart and really intelligent. The scam of, yes, there's a number of them, because if you were a scammer, and I don't very often think like scammers, and that's part of my problem. I think like a regulator. So, but if I were a scammer, what scam would cover everybody? A Social Security scam, right? That would really get me in touch with everybody, because everybody's got a Social Security number. So what else? Medicare. That would cover everybody on Medicare, right? So occasionally I jump into the shoes of a scammer and say, how would I think about that? And then I jump right back out going, no, I don't think I could sleep at night. So anyway, yes, there's lots of different scams out there. Just be very, very careful who you give your even phone number to. We had to change my mother-in-law's phone number because she was heartbroken because she'd had that phone number for a long time. But they were getting calls that not appropriate. We couldn't get them off the list. Charities are able to call you if you are on the do not call list. But if you ask them not to call back, they have to take you off that list and respect that wish. But that national registry called the do not call list.
It's only good if you're legitimate.
I agree. I wish I could solve that problem. Anyway, it's been a pleasure to be here today. If you have additional questions, and I know this is hard information to walk out with, but the best part is to take an extra packet and share it with someone else. And then while you have time, if you have a group of about 40 or 50 and you want to organize a seminar, then come on up to me and I'll give you my business card and we'll start the process for organizing it. Okay? You know what? I've got it in my file right here, and I'll give you that information. Does everybody want to hear that?
Good luck, because they say they'll get back to you and give you something, and you never
That's why I suggest that idtheft.utah.gov, is because that will send you to the appropriate places, and that's where I went. Because I trusted the Attorney General to send me to the right place. So, idtheft.utah.gov, okay?
Yeah. You know, I got an interesting scam, which I knew was a scam right from the start.
Uh-huh.
I had a dining room table I was trying to sell.
Oh, yeah.